Right. Well, I think that's fine as a supplemental way, but I think that the notice should be available to all, including people whose numbers you may not have to call and ask. You know, it really should be done on the Pacifica site, and I would say on the sites of all the local stations as well. And I have a concern in New York where a member of the LSC who is, in fact, I don't know what anyone's intentions are, but the person is eligible to run as their term expires in December 2006, and they are not just recruiting, not just announcing, hey, the position is open, but they're actually asking potential candidates for the position to contact them. And it seems to me that there certainly is room there for that to be seen as improper behavior.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, they should be contacting me, or email should be sent. Nobody like that has talked to me. I mean, I've talked to people in New York and have asked for suggestions. But let's go back to your original thing. I'm talking to Pete Karakas tomorrow morning to put up on Pacifica.org, the website that I've already put up on KPFH.org as a model. Along with that will be those job descriptions. I originally was going to put that up on all the websites, and I wanted to talk to people at different stations and get some suggestions, try to find out a little bit about what was happening at the stations so that I could interview people. But you're right. It should be open to all, and I'll do that. I'll do that not only with the national, but also pop it, an individualized one at each of the local websites.
Okay, great. Now, I missed the beginning of the call, and I haven't had a chance to listen to the May 21st call that I wasn't on, so I don't know if this came up. But was there any authorization given to the chair of this committee, who is, in fact, the member that I'm referring to solicit applications and ask people to contact her?
No.
Okay. That's one. With regard to the whole idea of gift subscriptions, my concern about this has been from the very beginning that stations, and I know that we do it in New York and other stations do it, I've heard other stations do it, promote the idea of gift subscription as a way of expanding the listenership. People will get the folio so they know what's on when, and they become more involved in the station. They know what's happening
exactly
at the stations.
Exactly.
There were no voting rights attached to this initially for any of us. And certainly, as a result, when we suggest people do gift subscriptions, the primary motivation is not also that they can vote. It's also that they can be exposed to the range of programming that we do on the station. And we've often suggested that people do it as graduation gifts. And I know parents have called in and done it for their children, and children have called in and done it for their parents.
Right.
So the idea of simply, I don't know, it seems to me that we're depriving people of what would otherwise be their right to be full participants in the Pacifica process by retroactively saying, hey, if you didn't pay for your subscription yourself, and of course there may be times when people who are partners or friends or relatives may use one person's card instead of their own to expedite a payment, or maybe I don't have a checking account, but my roommate does, so my roommate, you know, sends the check, and the bill comes in my roommate's name, and they send the check in. I don't know that we're able to discern any of that from the database, from looking at the entry on the database. So, especially because they're not huge numbers, I don't understand why it's so important to actually make the penalty retroactive, as opposed to saying, well, moving forward, beginning with the fall, the next, you know, everyone will be in drive time in October, I suppose. You know, beginning in October, the new policy is that, you know, gift subscriptions will not bring you voting membership, in which case they probably won't be used. But to retroactively say to people whom you encouraged to do this, okay, well, thanks for the money, but guess what? You can't really participate fully. I have a lot of concerns about that.
Mm-hmm. It's a couple things. First of all, as far as I know, it's not retroactive. In other words, the bylaws, to me, and the part that I quote about the bylaws in that memo, are that the person contributes. And if somebody, if it doesn't say, or has a contribution made in their name, it doesn't say that. It says the person contributes. It's an active verb. we don't have voter registration, which basically means if a person is given a gift subscription, we have no idea what the relationship is. The person, I think it's a good idea to have gift subscription and to get the person more involved with the station. But for the person to actually be a member, full-fledged member for voting rights, I'm following the bylaws. The bylaws basically say you contribute. And if the person hasn't contributed, the voting rights are not extended. That person really has not registered to vote. We have no idea when there's these gift subscriptions exactly what the relationship is of that person to the station or to any station or to Pacifica. That's the problem with it. So I don't see it as being retroactive. I see it as simply a clarification.
Well, you know, I think that people, you know, money is handled differently by different people. You may have a situation where one person in a household pays all the bills or has the checking account or whatever the case is, so that person's debit
That's
card
not a
or that
good subscription.
No, 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 but it is if, in fact, when I called in, let's say I'm the person with the account, so I say, okay, you know, send the bill to Doreen Roberts, but send a subscription to John Brown. As the record is going to show that Doreen Roberts gave a gift subscription to John Brown, who may have given me the $25 the week before.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe give me the $25 the following week. And the system will show that as a gift subscription, but his intention was, in fact, to join BAI. But he didn't have a debit card that he could just do it, or he didn't have a checking account and didn't want to, you know, okay, I've got to go buy a money order. You know, there are all sorts of arrangements that people make. I understand that some people have this fear that, you know, someone's going to go out and buy 10,000 subscriptions. And I think that, and I don't, you know, I know we can certainly talk to Nick Harlick about this. He's offered to make himself available to the committee to discuss questions of membership and how the data is entered and so on and so forth. But I don't know what's reflected in Memphis, but I do know what the intention was at the time that I used my debit card to make a payment for someone. So I think saying that, okay, this now means X is something that you can move on going forward. But to go back and change the rules which were in effect and the general understanding that people had when they took particular steps or did particular things, it's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
yeah.
Let me be a little bit clear about this when I talked about clarifying policy. When people were entered in as a gift subscription, they were not listed as active membership. That's true of Memphis. When you do that, when you post it, so when I went in to check on Memphis and I said grind out this list, the gift subscriptions weren't on it. The gift subscriptions automatically don't come through that because they're not listed as active donors. That's a fact. Now, the question came in, what about somebody who sends in like I do? I send in a check for my wife. I send in a check for myself. It's in my name and my bank account. We're at the same address. She has a different last name than I do. Is that a gift subscription? And the answer is no, that wasn't treated as a gift subscription. I actually looked on the database, and the reason for it is they're at the same address, and it's assumed as a $50 check living at the same address that covers both people if it's $50 or more. And that has been the tradition. Now, people are not using that as the tradition. This is what I've talked to several people about this, and this is theoretically what's being done, which is why in Memphis there is this gift box and why when you grind it out, that gift box is not seen when it's checked as an active donor. So I'm coming up with a clarification that my understanding is was followed all along. Gift memberships were never seen as active voting memberships. They were seen as a way of involving people by getting them the folio, trying to get them more involved. And if they want voting rights on their own, they do what the bylaws say. They contribute $25. They put in their three options or more. I can add a clarification about people sending in checks for somebody at the same address.
Or it may not be the same address.
It may not be the same address, yes. That's
well, then it would have to, yeah, that at that point, you're right. At that point, there would have to be, I will be honest, I don't, I really, just checking here, I don't think we're going to have many problems with that, but, you know, I'll set up some sort of an appeal for that.
Yeah, I think, if even one person is being disadvantaged or disenfranchised by this process, that it's a problem. And I would hope that this what you described as a clarification is, in fact, being communicated.
I'll add the clarification and send that out for sure.
No, I'm saying I hope that that's being communicated to the program directors at least, who are the people who then, you know, talk to the people who are pitching on air, so everyone is clear moving forward where we are. My other concern is with regard to donations to either to the national office or the archive, and the suggestion that someone who has in fact contributed directly to the national office, to the foundation, or someone who has contributed to the archive, then get to vote. I certainly understand that, okay, it's at least $25 that came into Pacifica, and that's a larger point, but the language describing who gets to vote, in much the same way that you're saying that people who may have been recipients of gift subscriptions don't qualify to vote. The bylaws are really clear that the contribution has to have been to one of the radio stations or hours work at the station.
Right.
So any suggestion that without a bylaws change, which I can't imagine there being trouble with, although this is Pacifica, there will always be trouble with even the simplest thing, I would support, and in fact I will work towards a bylaws change that allows people who contribute to the foundation, because I think sometimes people get mailings and they get confused about what exactly they're sending for. They just see Pacifica and they go with it, and that's a great thing that people are that responsive. So I understand that people may have contributed to National thinking that they were sending it to their local station, not paying a lot of attention to the P.O. Box or whatever the case is. But I do think that what you are suggesting by making it possible for them to vote in this round does, in fact, constitute a bylaw change without going through the process of a bylaws change.
Yeah, you actually may be right on this. This is my intuitive feeling about what's right. But the reason I haven't come out with a memo or haven't I'm talking to people about it, including this committee, is because I still haven't been. There's two issues here. One is the legal issue, and that'll be one side or the other. And I'm checking with of course our lawyer and a couple of other lawyers. Just if it's said that that's a bylaw change implicitly or explicitly, that ends it right there. The other thing is, if there is a gray area reading the bylaws, then there's still a question how to handle this. It's a problem because I definitely, absolutely don't want to include those 10,000 people as part of the quota. We'll never make our quota. I mean, I don't know where you'd put them. I don't know where you'd put the people.
You mean quorum or?
Quorum,
you're saying
yes.
Quota. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Quorum. Sorry. So then the question comes: is it legal not to basically treat them as two class? Is it treating them as two classes of membership to say they have to actually call in? And probably the simplest way to deal with this is, just do the same thing as last year and simply not send ballots. It isn't many people right now, but it could be larger numbers in the future.
I thought you said there were. Tens of thousands now.
No,
gifts
of thousands. There was about 10,000 people who send to Pacifica and don't send to the individual stations. Of those 10,000 people, there were a few dozen who called up and said they wanted to vote.
Mm-hmm. Right, but,
50,
you know, I don't...
Less than 50.
Yeah, I don't think the privilege, should be afforded only those who call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think either we change the bylaws so it applies to everyone who makes any contribution to any arm of Pacifica, or it stays as the bylaws indicate and no one is eligible. or if they've not contributed directly to the state.
Those were the choices. I have no question which way I lean, which is nobody votes on that group.
All right. Okay, those are my questions. Thanks.
Sure.
Okay. Ted, I think you were next.
Thank you. Les, I've got a less than hypothetical question and a solution. My question is, if the local elections committee and the local election supervisor go to management and they say, we are concerned about reaching quorum and we want you to air candidate statements during drive time, and management says no, then what happens? And my answer to my own question, and I expect you're going to come up with a different answer, is that the local election supervisor should first report this to the local station board, because the local station board is the supervisor of hires and fires, or participates in hiring and firing, the general manager of the station. The general manager of the station is more concerned with programming than with the elections. They may deny the right to have these programs on during drive time. So it's back to my earlier question about the line of responsibility and the reporting process and so on.
And you want my response to that?
Yeah.
Well, my response is a little different. It turns out that the fund drives are going to occur during the campaign period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem that I've already been dealing with. In order to handle that problem, to be honest, if we attempt to do much what I think I've got agreement on is that announcements about the election, somewhat exciting announcements about the election, hopefully, will be played during the day. But during the fundraising drive itself, you're not going to have candidates on the air. You're not going to be doing much in terms of the election other than insisting that these statements about people voting and going to the website and doing things that don't much disrupt the fundraising drive, that those things will occur. And the reason I'm saying that is because if we don't do that, we are going to get pure hostility on the part of staff. We are. And I want the staff to be involved. I want them to be involved to the point where we say, look, you have to go overboard before the fundraising drive in order to satisfy mm-hmm. not just, you know, getting the quorum, but to satisfy getting the outreach and getting these candidates on the air and making the system work. And we're trying to work with you, having it front-loaded. So that's why before, you know, even the nomination period is over, we're going to have things set up, hopefully, across the board and get the staff on board on this. But it is awkward because, as I say, the fundraising drive is in the middle of this campaign period. But I don't, you know, if we try to merge those two, we're going to get such hostility on the part of the station. I'm not sure that the general manager can go to the folks. I mean, there's going to be complaints all the way up and down. We're simply not going to get cooperation if we do that.
Well, we won't make our money.
What I would like to follow up, if I might. Can I follow up?
Of course.
Ted, go ahead.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm definitely
more inclined towards the carrot than the stick. But I am wondering what kind of transparency there will be if there is resistance on the part of general managers regarding making these elections transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Cleared out the question.
That's a good, yeah.
My original suggestion was that local election supervisors be added to the agenda of LSV meetings to report what is going on, hopefully what is going on that's good, not the problems, but either way.
Well, and you're asking, first of all, I feel that that's correct anyway, because I think that there should be interaction between the local election supervisor and the staff and the LSB, both. And for transparency, the local election supervisor is the one that can make the report. So I agree with you.
Well, I hope that will be put in some formal way so that it's not a so that it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any more questions?
I'll tell you, let me just add to that, because I am talking to people now, and that's one of the key things that I'm talking to folks about. The job of local election supervisor, we all know that. It's not a mechanical job. It's a political job. It's somebody who's working with staff and working with those people who are concerned about the station, and that includes certainly the LSB. So that's one of the things I'm asking about. Do they know what is happening in the station? Do they know about the LSB? Commitment to fairness, desire to engage the staff in actively supporting the elections and actively encouraging outreach for more candidates, for more communities to be involved. Those are the kinds of questions I'm asking people.
Can I ask one more last question for me? This is Ted.
Please, go ahead.
Okay. you said that you don't want candidates from the local station board serving on the local elections committee. What about this committee? And if you want candidates off this committee, when do you want that to happen?
The first part of it is a legal part, which is clearly they have to be off by when they announce they're running. the tendency there, here's what I'm thinking about that. The tendency there then is to delay, if you want to be active in these committees, is to delay announcing that you're running.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to do is to front load that by putting people, when they declare, after the first month, there's a 2-month period for candidates to get their nomination papers in. And my feeling is that people after the first month should get their names and their paper, their 500-word statement, up on the web page to encourage everybody to get it up.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems a month into the process, there'd be enough information going out both on the web page and on the air that people would be aware of this. And that would somewhat even it up if people are delaying just so that they can continue working on the committee. I would at least do something like that. And if there's other suggestions or feelings about this, you can email me, and we can talk about it at the next meeting.
May I add
which, by the way,
that?
Is before the nominations open.
Right. This is Carolyn. I just wanted to add to that. I think last year, I don't know whether it was just this supervisor or Kenny Mostern, but there was a proviso that when people asked for the nominations packet, they became candidates. I think that had something to do with whether or not they could stay on the committees.
Mm-hmm.
I forget I'll have to look that up, but I remember that date kicked in at some point because everybody waited until the last day to file and to get things up on the web. They wanted to see what other people were doing first, and they didn't want other people to see their statements until the last possible minute. So that was a real problem. And spacing that out is going to be a real question.
Yeah, unfortunately, they can download the papers from the Internet, and then you don't know when they're signing up for papers.
Well, we said that they had to come and get them in person because the supervisor needed to meet people face-to-face. Maybe it was just turning them in person. But I think at one point we said that the packet had to be picked up in person.
Our supervisor had to hand it to him.
Yes, I think that's. I don't know whether it was all stations or just one or two stations, but that was a good safety precaution to make sure that there were no ringers and that people actually did have the actual people who would pick them up and so on doing it.
That's so he could explain everything about
that
the rules
too.
And everything. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good point. Well, are there any more questions on this? Les, thank you so much for all the time. You've been really generous with your time. Appreciate it. And I'm sure by next time we'll have even more questions.
I hope I have more answers, yeah.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, the next item on our agenda is the work group on gift memberships.
Should I stay on for that?
Only
yeah.
if you care to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, that would be good, because there are two actually work group reports coming up.
Uh-huh.
The affiliated donors and the gift membership. Mm-hmm. Who would like to deal with that report? I was on that. I will repeat what I said. I think Don White reported, and I reported, that we had gotten some information from our stations, and I am still a little bit confused about how it works, but essentially our membership coordinator, rather, said that she didn't have time to answer all my questions until after the fund drive was over, and I haven't gotten back to her since then. But as I understand it, as Les explained it, the gift membership is entered on the name of the donor. Now, I'm a little confused about that, because when I donated a gift membership, I was not clear whether the person receiving it was listed as a giftee, a recipient, or not. So I'm still not sure. All right, good. Thank you, whoever muted themselves. That was pretty noisy. So I don't know. I do think that we do have quite a few of these, because gift memberships were advertised quite heavily during the fund drive, and I suspect that there are quite a few of them at BAI, perhaps. I haven't heard of anybody else using them that extensively during the fund drive, advertising them. Okay,
Carolyn?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Don White here at KPFK.
Mm-hmm.
It's very straightforward. We have a subscriptions membership coordinator, Terry Guy, who's been at the station for over 20 years, and
mm-hmm.
he was very clear. He said gift memberships are not entered onto any voting rolls, and I think, as Les pointed out, they're listed as a recipient of a gift. Now, what often happens is when someone calls in during pledge drive, they pay for themselves. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, it's more common for people to call up and donate and become a listener sponsor or continue their listener sponsorship for themselves. And then they say, oh, and I would like to give a gift to someone.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have a huge number of them, but it's very, very clear. Consistent with what Les has laid out, I think at KPFK, and I think in other stations, they're not listed on any voting rolls, and they do not have the full rights of Pacifica membership.
Mm-hmm. I know that WBI, we removed the gift checkbox from the pledge form.
Oh, you did?
When was
yes.
this?
I think the last batch that were printed up, because it was confusing as to whether or not that violated the two membership classification rules.
I'm sorry, Carolyn, that's not true. It's on our pledge cards. It's always been, and it is today.
Yeah, well, I was told by the general manager that it was being taken off, so perhaps...
I regularly handle the pledge cards. It's on our pledge cards.
Mm-hmm. Well, then we
have some
conflicting information. The question there is whether we have a two membership problem here, a dual, you know, status.
No, because they aren't. No, I think because they do not become members. It's not a question of two levels
right,
of membership.
Exactly.
They're simply receiving a gift subscription, as it were, but they do not become members with the full rights of membership.
Well, in a membership organization, I was told at one point that that was a distinction without a difference, that we really need to get some legal advice on that. I'm not sure how that works under the California code. Does anyone have any... Well, you've already told us about KPFA. Does anyone have any information about W? Do we know how that works?
Do we have anyone on from W?
No.
No, I don't think we do.
Mm-hmm. No.
Mary Berg, I have something.
Yes.
I have a question. This is goes back to, I think, some things Serene was saying, but in my experience in the phone room, people often call, like, parents and their kids, or kids and their parents, you know, grown kids, and they want to give them a gift subscription, or a neighbor that, you know, wants.
Mm-hmm.
And they all assume that these are full-fledged regular members when they give the money.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, they're kind of excited about it and so forth, mm-hmm. and they want sometimes it to be a surprise, and they talk to you about it. And so there is, so it, in areas where they're never listed, I don't know. I am not certain that the gift box is always checked in these cases. I don't know. I don't think the number is very large in any case relative to the total number of subscriptions that come in. But
mm-hmm.
I just want to – I don't want to start making them really angry and disappointed and disgusted. I think Serene has a point that this is not fair.
Don,
I wondered about this.
Don?
Uh-huh. Don, yeah. Well, I think we should just review, and I'm glad Les is still on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Les has issued a memo that makes this discussion to some degree moot. His memo includes the wording, this is a reminder to all stations that recipients of gifts or subscriptions are not eligible to vote in Pacifica
right.
elections. The bylaws are quite clear that a member must contribute in his or her own name, and it is in this active act that is equivalent to registering to vote. So to some degree for this election, I would just like to ask Les, basically this decision has been made, it's pretty much in cement, and this
yes.
committee will not, I mean, we're not being asked to reverse your decision, is that
no.
right?
No.
Mary Berg, when everybody's spoken, can I get back on to clarify what I was trying to get to?
Yes, I'm sorry for interrupting. Don, was that your entire question?
Well, I was just asking Les, are you still on the line?
Yeah. And you're right. It's in concrete. I did check with this. It's as a matter of fact, the wording is so... The English wording is very clear about who's a member, and it is active, and it is have contributed, not contributed, have contributed, or contributed in their name. It's not in there.
Mm-hmm. So to some degree...
That could be changed, but that's not my job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mary?
Well, what I was talking... I wasn't talking about whether... it's a fact or not, or should be a fact. I'm talking about what do we do about listeners' expectations. They have no clue of this. I'm not talking about reversing it or anything. What I really want to do, and I want the GIP work group to be addressing this, how do we save these listeners from just being really disgusted and disappointed? Because I know that they don't understand this way at all, and for years they've been doing this, and they have now, in their view, whether they're right or wrong, they're not bylaws experts. They're just subscribers to the station. And I'm just saying that we need to find some way of dealing with these people so that they are not totally put off and disappointed, and really it's not fair to them. And it, even if it's correct, unless we put that piece in of how we explain it to the listeners in some palatable way other than saying, well, pony up $25, that's really insulting, and it sounds like a scam to people. If you put yourself in the shoes of someone who doesn't know the bylaws and they're doing this for their kid, like I said, or someone they love, and they're really happy about it, and then they find that it all came to naught, and they put their money in, and they did all this stuff, and the person doesn't even get to be a member. I'm trying to find a way of addressing that so that we can put it out to listeners. I think that's a huge piece, and I'm not hearing anyone talk about it, and I think the GIPS working group needs to address it, and I don't know who all else needs to. But I think it's big.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with whether the validity of it. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, maybe we do need to meet and talk about how to do that.
I think that's really huge.
One possibility, well, there are several possibilities, but maybe that's what a work group should do, is talk about that off the list and get together separately. We have not really done that in a formal way. Is that all right if we convene a conference call in a few days for the work group? Everyone agree to that? All right, I will do that. I don't know if I was the convener on that or not, but I will certainly do that.
I think I forget. It's in the minutes. I'll look at it.
Mm-hmm. I'll certainly do that. All right, that is a problem then, and as how to address that. I think we can probably all agree on that without alienating listeners and losing them. One of the problems that I do see informally from my quick check at BAI is retrieving those names from the list. What I was told is that that's very difficult without a patch from MEMSIS. And I don't know if the supervisor understood my question or if that's true or not. Les, can you tell me if that's so or not?
No, I actually sent out the directions. I can send them out again, but they're pretty clear. It's in MEMSIS. It's simply a query. You query the gift box, and it prints them out, and it takes a couple minutes.
Okay.
There's a query on every field. That's how we got the gift names out of our subscription list at KPFA, but it's on every MEMSIS box. So they, what I will say is that in the past, this hasn't been an issue because the gift things simply don't print out, and because they were so few. People just ignored the fact that they weren't being looked at. This time we'll look at them, and then we look a second time, because if the person who's given a gift does subscribe, that's a separate entry, it turns out. And so we have to take all the gift folks and then look to see whether or not they get a ballot based on the fact that they are donors within the proper time period. Just the fact that they are given a gift does not remove them from any particular list. I can send that out to you again if you need it.
Well, I think we may need to authorize the printout.
It just basically gives the directions what you put in and where you put it in and MEMSIS, and it'll print these out.
Well, I can inquire, but I think we need your authorization to really print those out and give them to the work group.
That'd be a good idea,
Could you do that?
Certainly.
I'm sorry, point of information?
Yes.
Are we talking about printing out a list of names?
Yes, the people who received gift subscriptions.
I would object to membership information being disseminated to members of the committee. I don't think if people need a count, that's one thing, but members' personal information, and names are personal information, being distributed to the committee is not necessary in order for us to do any work, and I object to it.
Well, that may be
talking
proper.
About the number of them, are we not?
Yeah, maybe getting the number would be fine at the first. We don't need the names unless
we're not going to contact
we need to
people.
Check with the people who have subscribed later. That
we don't
need to find out the names.
No,
if there's clarification needed about someone's status, that would be the job of the local election supervisor.
That's
I don't
correct.
See why any member of this committee would need to have access to a list of members' names.
No,
that's probably true.
We're not having the names, but what we need to know is how many people there are, and so that we can develop a procedure, no matter who's supposed to contact these people.
Oh, no, I agree with you, Mary, but Carolyn just said at a later date.
No, not the names.
Okay.
Yeah, the only time I think that might be, and you're right, the supervisor could do that extra task if it had to
be. This committee has no right to a list of names.
Excuse me, I haven't finished yet.
I don't think
the supervisor could do that extra task if the names had to be cross-checked against subsequent donors to find out if they actually were, had changed their status from a gift recipient to actual donor. All right, that's fine. Thank you, Les. If you could get those numbers for us, that would be much appreciated.
Okay.
That would be great.
Thanks.
All right, any more information on that report? All right, the next report, then, is the one that Mary put on in the amended agenda, and that is the work group on affiliated donors.
Right, and the I was the convener of that, and we did have some discussion, but we really, at that point, felt we needed, I mean, how many people is this, and how does it happen, and how can we deal with it? And we did come sort of to the idea that we could, that this must be, as was said during Les's report, these are people that the national office is contacting who are not subscribers, not our own database, because there's no problem with that. All of those people are already affiliated with the station, mm-hmm. and whether they, in addition, donate to the national office, that's not the people. We're talking about the lists that Pacifica buys from right. elsewhere. And if this number is sizable, if it really is 10,000 people, again, I think what this work group needs to do is to find what do we do about this. We can't just call them, and again, we can't say, well, if you put $25, you can now, you know, this is not acceptable. I would certainly feel that was a really horrible scam to just squeeze more money out of me in this day and age when, you know, businesses are so corrupt. So what would be the next steps? Do we just find out how widespread this is? And of course, it requires making sure that all of these people that donate to the national office are not on a regular list. And what's involved in, what kind of labor is involved in finding this out for all five signal areas so we can determine if there's really a big enough problem that it needs to be addressed with finding procedures to deal with these people? That's my question, I guess, to Les.
Yeah.
Or anyone.
Again, putting this in perspective, I think this is going to become a bigger problem after this year.
After this
year. It may be a semi-big problem this year. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, as I said, I think it was like a couple dozen or several dozen, less than 50 people.
Okay, so that's really not, that's probably not an issue that probably don't listen to the stations anyway, or they would be subscribing to them. But if it's, so you think that that's all there is this year and we just need to address the procedure for next year? Is that what
we have to talk about the role of technology, because mm-hmm. more and more people are having the podcast downloaded into their computer, and so now it becomes very possible. We're no longer limited geographically, you know, in terms of this.
Well, that's not, I don't think it's the geographical thing. It's whether or not how the names are solicited. If they're listening online, it doesn't matter if they're in Tierra del Fuego. They're allied with, they're affiliated to the station they contacted.
No. The bylaws,
well,
Serena's right, but the bylaws are very clear that people give, it's the money they give to a particular station. The fact is, even if they listen to a different station, so for example, somebody who gives money to two stations only gets to vote at one station.
Right.
And that's the station that geographically they're nearest to.
Or that they choose. I mean, we have people online who do that, and they say they subscribe to more than one, but they want to be alive with us. They're pretty savvy about that.
No, it's not a question of savvy. It's a question right now of trying to abide by the bylaws, puts them in that geographic area.
Oh, wait a minute.
What is the truth?
You know, Les should be able to answer these inquiries without being interrupted.
Well, I think I misunderstood everything. Do I understand you? Can I just clarify, Les? Are you saying that the bylaws, let's say if someone's listening online in Tierra del Fuego and they're listening to KPFA all the time and they get hold of the KPFA website and subscribe, have I misunderstood you, and are you saying in
fact, you did misunderstand me. Mary, the bylaws don't deal with the Internet. They don't deal with podcasting. They don't deal with people getting requests for funds from the Pacifica National. They don't deal with that at all. Because they don't deal with that, it's assumed that they're within the listening area of a station. If I sit here and I subscribe to WBAI and the KPFA, it's not my choice. I'm automatically, according to the bylaws, made a KPFA member, and only a KPFA member. We do a check on that in terms of the database list. I have all the database lists, and we do a cross-check. So that's the way it is. Now, you're raising a question that's not in the bylaws. That's what I was saying earlier. And this is an increasing number of people that has not been dealt with. So because it's not even mentioned in the bylaws, I don't know if a person in Tierra del Fuego subscribes to WBAI and KPFA. The bylaws don't deal with that.
Let's say they just subscribe to one. Is that a problem in your eyes?
No. If they subscribe to one, they're automatically a member of that station.
Okay. It doesn't matter that they're geographically not close. You're not saying
right.
that.
Right. Because
okay,
it doesn't deal with the problem at all. It's assuming that the people who subscribe are in the listening area. That's what the bylaws assume. It's not true, but that's what they assume.
Yes, that's what we need to address, I think. Maybe that's what the work group has to deal with.
This is Serene. Can I get on the set?
Yes, Serene, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to offer something that may or may not make a difference to you, Mary. Someone can become a member by listening to a hard radio and pledging, or listening on the Internet and pledging.
Right.
If they pledge to more than one station, the default membership is the geographic area within which they live.
That's
if they live someplace where there are no stations, then whichever station they pledge for is the one they'll get. If they pledge to more than one, when we go through the process of checking for dupes, they should show up as being a member or having come through the membership list for more than one station. And I don't know what they're doing. I mean, if someone lives, let's say, in Brazil, and they've pledged to KPFA and to WBAI, I don't know how the election supervisor goes about checking which one of those stations they'll get ballots for. But the real complication, I think, comes, or the disappointment factor will come for people who have pledged either to the archives or to the national office directly, and therefore do not have membership with any of the five stations and are not eligible to vote.
That's correct. That's correct.
Those are the
I think that's what the working group should.
That's what I thought.
Well, I think, if I may, Carolyn here, I think what we need is, some legal clarification on the membership question, what constitutes membership status and a dual membership, an illegal dual membership definition. And for that, we may need permission to consult an attorney. Does anyone remember the procedure for getting legal advice? Do we need to go to the chair?
Carolyn, this is Harrison. I think the bylaws are fairly clear. And
agree.
I think that Mary is correct. In the event that a person qualifies for membership affiliation with more than one foundation radio station, he or she shall be entitled to only one membership and shall notify the foundation and each applicable foundation radio station of the radio station he or she wishes to be affiliated as a member.
Oh.
Right.
I am wrong on that. Okay.
That's what I was trying to...
These bylaws are up to date, but...
No, that's what they say. That's what I thought, but I thought maybe I'm reading that
Harrison, wrong. What section is that, please? Do you have that?
Section 3 in Article 3, I think. It's the section on membership affiliation by radio station.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Don White here. Could I ask a question?
Yes, Don, go ahead.
Well, I just, I don't know if I'm on track on this, but it seems to me that this so-called phantom 10,000 that we're talking about, and I say phantom only because it could be 9 or 11 or whatever, it seems to me that most of these have been created by direct mail from the Pacifica Foundation and not through people listening on the Internet. When they buy the mailing list of Nation magazine, they do direct mailing. So it seems to me one issue I'd like to ask Les, don't we need to know what those mailings have said and what people have been offered when they take us up and return money and so on? Because legally, if those mailings were to say... would you become a listener sponsor? Would you become a member? Would you become a subscriber? Wouldn't that alter our legal obligations to some of those people?
Yeah, it would. I see that I'm... because I don't have the bylaws in front of me. I'm sitting here at my kitchen table. And I want to be careful. When I ask about this, I was concerned about the extent of the problem in the past and for this year. And it looks like potentially it could be a large problem, but practically probably this year it won't be.
Okay.
When I asked exactly your question about what was solicited, it was more the general thing that Pacifica is a, you know, it's the same thing you read many times. It's, you know, for peace, social justice, carrying out struggles against the war, talking about prisoners' rights, those types of things, the types of things that would appeal to nation readers, that we have affiliates. Democracy Now is on, you know, 450 stations, et cetera. We're asking people to support this network financially. So there is no mention of membership. That wasn't even the thought in this process. It was ignored. That part of it was ignored. So what's happening is that there are people who contribute who actually listen. That's where this comes in, and that's where, who the people are. They listen to these stations on the Internet. They're following them. They're hearing about the elections, not through the solicitation, but through listening to the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And they call up only during those times, during election times. There's no calls like this during non-election times. And that means that they are actually listening to the radio station and hearing about the elections, hearing candidate statements, and they want to participate.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the folks who are calling in. And the question is what to do about them. You know, rethinking this, I think maybe Serena's right. Just, you know, it feels right to give them the right to vote because they're interested, but probably the feeling shouldn't be followed through on.
Okay, well, that's...
Can I get on this back again? This is Harrison.
Yes, Harrison, go ahead.
Well, one legal solution that occurs to me, I don't know if it's real or not, is that if somebody calls up or some way indicates that that's their desire to vote, I just realized it won't work. But anyway, at some point, perhaps, people who have contributed, we have a follow-up letter for them.
Yes.
And in that letter, we can say, you know, you are contributing to the Pacifica Foundation. If you wish to be a member of a particular organization, we will direct your, at least $25 of your contribution to a local station,
right,
and you will become a member.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what...
And that I think, would satisfy... I think that would satisfy the bylaws. However, because of the close date, that won't work for people who are calling up.
That's right.
Good
point. Are you on the work group, Harrison?
Yeah, he is.
Good. Okay, maybe.
I know. We snatched him.
That's something you can all you can all work out when you consider that. I would also suggest, if I may, that the work group get copies of those letters that went out, so that any follow-up letter you want to write has some continuity and some sense of what the original tone was.
Point of information?
Yes, Serene.
Follow-up letters that who wants to write? The committee is now writing to members?
Harrison just made a suggestion for the work group to consider, and I suggested that if there was a, if they were going to consider a follow-up letter, they should look at the original letters that went out in order to make sure the tone was not conflicting with it.
I think Serene's right that, you know, this is another thing for the far future.
I'm sorry, I cannot
hear. I can't hear Harrison.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's better. Thank you.
I agree with Serene to some extent that you know, we can't be writing the letters. I'm just making suggestions to our national election supervisor as to an approach that might be taken in the future. I don't think that we're in any position to have this apply right now.
Well, that's all this committee can do anyway, Harrison, is to make suggestions. But thank you.
Can I make a request of all the work groups? Whenever you're planning your meetings, if you could post it to the list. I'm not officially on the work group, and it's not, well, I don't know how likely it is that I'll be able to join the call, but I would at least like to know when it's happening in the event that I can.
Okay. Thanks. I'd like to be on the stack if there's nobody on the stack.
Mary, yes, go ahead, Mary.
Well, thanks to Harrison, I grabbed my bylaws, and it's not actually geographical at all. All it says is, in the event that a person qualifies with more than one station, they can select which one they want. If they don't notify the foundation of which they want, they'll be deemed to be affiliated with the one to which they last contributed. So the bylaws leaves a blank in the case of lists that are purchased for people who never subscribed, who are by definition non-subscribers. Of course, they never did concert. So if all the bylaws say is the person has to choose, which makes me think that that letter that Harrison talked about is a good idea for our work group to try to draft up something. And, I mean, it's fine to say so-and-so should do it and so-and-so should do it, but they're all swamped, and that's what we've got a work group for. This is what we can do, is draft up that kind of a letter that would go out automatically. Mm-hmm. The national office buys up all these things, then the national office sends these letters out and then does exactly what Harrison suggested. And I also want to say, Serene, we haven't actually met. We just talked after the last call. But okay. I'll certainly, now that we can kind of go ahead with some tasks that, and we understand what the problem is, lists are being bought, then certainly I'll just put a notice out, you know, how so that anybody can be part of it or hear it or whatever.
I would like to make one point in terms of finances. If it turns out that a work group has only 3 or 4 people on it, and you could possibly use your calls on your telephones if you have provision to make 2 or 3 calls and connect each other that way instead of calling using the Foundation 877 number, that would be really helpful. Just a thought.
There's also freeconference.com, you know, that you can go through and just each person would pay for the cost of their call. And a lot of people have unlimited long distances, not a problem.
Yeah, if you could post that would be helpful. Thank you. All right, are we pretty much finished? So these work groups will be meeting separately and reporting back.
Yeah,
and
guess,
if we can report back to each other in writing, I think that would be really helpful too.
Mary Bird, just briefly, what I think I'll do now is just get hold of everybody that's on the work group and see, you know, how we want to meet.
Fine.
Or just put it to the whole list, so anybody that wants to join, so we can. And if there's any other tasks, so far the one that I get that makes sense is for us to draft up this letter, which we would propose for the national office would be sending out. Am I correct? I think that's the only place the problem arises is if people pay the national office. Now, what about the archives? Serene made that point. And do we need to have a letter less from the archives as well? Can the problem exist for people
who pay
the archives?
I'm not actually sure.
And how do we find that out?
I'll ask and send out whatever I have. I'm not sure about the archives. That's a totally different thing. And my feeling is that the people who subscribe to the archives are much more aware of the reality of Pacifica.
Right.
That's a totally different.
Right, they're already subscribers somewhere, and this is a donation they make. Right,
mm-hmm.
I think that's probably almost entirely true because the archives is not buying list. I know that.
Right.
Okay.
All right, moving right along.
Thank you.
Number 4 is the Public Elections Committee e-list, and I seem to recall Terry saying he would not be able to be on this call.
Oh.
I'm just, as I'm looking at this, I'm trying to remember exactly when. It was some time ago. But the list is open and waiting, so I don't know whether we want to move ahead with that. I wanted to have Terry on the list to talk about it. So I hesitate to postpone it again. But my only question was who was moderating the list. I thought it was appropriate to have Terry and the secretary as moderators alone. I don't know if we need to vote on that or not. I certainly don't need to be involved.
I think we put that out. The only thing, you know, I don't think we could go too far without Terry here.
No.
He wanted to not be permanently involved, but what he had suggested, which I confess to not following, especially of late, is to post everything to all three. Now, I'm not sure why that makes an awful lot of email in everybody's mailbox, which is why I kind of cringed from doing it.
Well, I'm not happy with that yet, because I don't think we've settled yet who will be permanent moderators, and I don't know that we actually, did we actually vote on that eventually? I don't recall that.
I think we did, but the issue I'm talking about is why he has sort of, we agreed, as I remember, to go along with Google of the three, you know, the Yahoo would rise up in Google.
By the way, I'm going to leave. I don't think I have anything else
okay,
to add
Liz,
to this.
Thank
okay,
you very much. Appreciate
thank
it.
You, Liz.
We know where to find you, Liz.
Yes. Again, ballot@pacifica.org. And you definitely know where to find me. Convention 209, National Office.
Okay. Right. Thank you again.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm not clear why I wish Terry were here so he could tell us why we should be sending mail to all three lists. I think we settled about the moderators.
Well, right now there are three moderators on there, I believe, and I thought it was appropriate to have only the secretary and the technical person, who was Terry.
Well, you're the moderator of the Yahoo list. That's still our main list because we didn't.
Yeah, I think we were going to keep that for things that really were not appropriate for public.
We definitely are keeping that. It's a question of, you know, how we wanted to, what we didn't get to is how we wanted to configure the Google list.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the public list that everybody could see. And, you know, what parameters we wanted for it. And gee, without Terry, I think we're going to have to postpone it again. We can be using it and send to it, but I think we can't do much more without Terry.
All right. Any objections to postponing that?
And then
hearing
maybe,
none, then I think we'll move right along then. Cause
and maybe we should just send to two and not send to all. We don't need to send to the rise-up list.
Well, if we're not going to do it, let's not do it part way. If we're going to postpone it, let's wait and make those decisions until later.
Okay.
If that's all right. Now, the next item was reports from directors, and unfortunately, Don is it.
Oh, my gosh.
The EC motions, I, if you could give us a little finalization here. I think none of them has been finalized, but maybe you could address
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I missed that.
There are three. This was number, there was no number. It was the director's reports on the status of elections committee motions before the PNB, and there were three of them. One of them was the transparency of meetings motion. The second was the member discipline motion. And the third was the motion on the WPSW election.
Yeah, well, you were also at the PNB meeting in New York during this, so let me take the second and third first. I don't have my notes in front of me, but
let me see
if I am not mistaken, two of these were referred to governance, weren't they?
Yes,
that's what I think.
So.
I can look at
right
them.
So.
Yeah, I should have. We tried to address the issue, to be perfectly blunt, the situation at WBAI in New York. And I am not addressing the merits. I am not addressing the merits of whether or not discipline was called for in the case, but we actually were concerned primarily over the suspension of representation to constituencies that have not had a member on that LSB. So we constructed a motion on LSB discipline, and everyone has that in front of them, I believe, because it was put on an addendum to this agenda.
Right.
That was referred to, that was defeated. Wait,
which one was defeated, Don?
Wait, was the
motion on member discipline? We passed it on 521, and I put it in addendum number 2.
That is true.
I have to get my notes for that.
I don't recall what happened to that. I thought it was referred somewhere, but I can't remember.
I think it was referred to governance.
Governance. Yeah, I believe
I
that was referred to governance also.
Mm-hmm. And the WPFW resolution, the chair ruled it out of order.
Was that was not referred to governance?
No, it was ruled out of order.
It was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I have here. I can get my notes.
I am so sorry. I need to have my PNB minutes in front of me for this, and I don't have them. I know that we were challenged. We were challenged on the basis of how was this relevant to the functioning of the Elections Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And those of us on the committee said, well, the you know, the guaranteeing of constituencies, their representation on LSBs, was of great importance to us. Not that discipline cannot be handed out by LSBs, but it seems as though one member in New York has been suspended from voting for a year or so.
Right.
But I have to apologize to the committee. I'm going to have to go and get my minutes on the PNB unless there's another. Mary,
I have a notebook. I went to get my notebook where
okay.
It was referred to governance, and I think the
I can find this out.
The one that was challenged as to our purview was the WPFW election question. Now, these were all handled in a bit of a rush, I think, at the end of the.
That's right. And the chair ruled that out of order.
Yes,
I have a question.
I was a little bit upset about that because we were asked to do that. We didn't ask for that. We were requested to give
right.
an opinion on that to the PNB, which we did. And then we were told it was not in our purview.